Today on The Breakdown, it's 2018. It's a $100,000 buy-in event. It's the Poker Masters main event, and there's only three players left. And what players they are: David Peters, Dan Smith, and Corey Aldemir. And Dan Smith and Corey Aldemir are going to play a hand that just goes one level past all the high-level stuff we've been breaking down, quite frankly, for the last while, where we keep getting to these cool moves the pros are doing against each other and all these nice plays. And this is just the next thing. And, I mean, it's impressive. And let's not forget, it's a 100K buy-in. There is a lot of money in play also. There's $750,000 between third and first. Everyone's got chips. This is going to be some kind of confrontation. Let's get into it right now on The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
You know, you hit me right in the feels with that opening, and all it took was two words. Do you know what they were?
Dan Smith?
No, it was, it's 2018.
Sitting
here in October 2020, ooh, that sounds like a nostalgic wonderland. Back in 2018 when we frolicked, you know, like, there would be multiple times a month in, you know, the month of October that you and many of our other friends would come to me and my wife's house, and we would barbecue and chatter about, go inside, outside, everywhere, free and easy.
You know, 2018 was by far, by a mile and a half, the worst year financially of my life. Like, by 17,000 miles, the worst year financially of my life. And yet, yes, it does seem great to go back to 2018. Sign me up, baby. I'm in. I would love that right now. But instead, we're here. We're trapped in this snow globe, looking outside the glass, never, ever escaping the fake snow that falls upon our heads.
You have fake snow in your apartment? Is that what's going on?
In the snow globe. Also water. By the way, I didn't even mention the drowning thing. But everyone's dead in the snow globe because of the drowning thing. Just in case you're wondering, any people that look like they're in there, they're
all dead. I was referring to the global coronavirus pandemic. You seem to be referring to something entirely different, in which people's homes are filled with fake snow and water, and it's causing death by asphyxiation.
That's not exactly that's not exactly what's happening between us. No, I'm drawing a metaphor. And sort of making a comparison of our situation to being trapped in the snow globe, where you can see, like 2018 and other possibilities out there, but where you are, you cannot get to them. And in fact, you are already dead because you've drowned a long time ago.
Oh, so that's the part that's tough to follow.
You ever see The Walking Dead, man? Zombies, ghosts, these things? Vampires?
I'm really not into zombie stuff. You're going to have to really blow me away with a zombie thing for me to want to watch it.
Well, I think I just did, because you would definitely watch fucking snow globe zombies.
I don't think I would. Oh, I think if something was called Snow Globe Zombies, I would avoid it.
Yeah, but the whole point is you care now. I got you to care. And that's the artist's job. You know, it isn't like you're indifferent. You're now avoiding it. That's a big win for Snow Globe Zombies and the whole brand.
Quick question for you, Jonathan Levy.
Yeah.
Which mystical creature genre are you less interested in seeing more of? Vampires or zombies?
Jeez. I'm going to say zombies, actually. I'm not interested in either one, but wow, are zombies overdone. Oh my gosh. And it's always the same, it feels like. No offense to all you TWD fans out there, but come on. We've seen it. We've lived it. It's over. It's not interesting. I'm sorry. Yeah. Vampire's not great either, but at least vampires, you can do interesting things with, it feels like, comparatively.
Yeah, the whole eternal life thing, I guess, is like an interesting angle, perhaps.
Yeah. Also, zombies by their nature are brainless, you know, and so there's only so much they can do. A vampire could be, you know, thoughtful and nuanced and stuff like that. Zombies, I'm not saying that never happens in modern media with zombies, but much, much less so, of course, because the notion of a zombie is like, you know, they're saying brains and they're walking slowly, or these days running after you with their arms out for unknown reasons, why their arms would have to be out. And that's it. They just want to eat your head, and that's the whole game. And there's nothing more to it. And, it'll spawn something like Zombieland, which is pretty good. Zombieland 2, by the way, quite wonderful. But mostly it's kind of dumb. Warm Bodies also pretty good. Mostly it's.
I was
going to
bring
seriously.
Up Warm Bodies.
What'd you say?
But I think we're gonna get a lot of flack for this, just like when we talked about football movies. But whatever. I think the peak for me of zombie media is 28 Days Later.
28 Days Later is at least pretty good, but I still feel it's a little bit. I've always felt it was overrated. The craft of it is better than almost all the other movies. It's directed by Danny Boyle. He's one of the greats. So there's a lot of like, you know, master moments. Like the cinematography is going to be better. The beats are going to be better. The moments, the strip, all those things are going to play better. They do a thing really nicely in 28 Days Later which is usually in these things, but done really well of like, well, the zombies are a problem. Humans are actually the bigger problem, you know? And that's like any really good monster type movie worth its salt. That's usually where they end up going. Like every Alien movie is like, actually the humans are the problem. You know, the humans are the one that are going to fucking get you. So they do that very nicely in 28 Days Later, but I don't know. Still don't love it. I'll tell you the truth.
Yeah. Okay. Warm Bodies. Good, because it's just a different angle. So that's yeah.
There was a show on Netflix called Daylight. Just one season, and they canceled it, which is like a tween, not even tween, teenager, young adult version of this, but done with like a really like fun, campy type vibe that was surprisingly good. And I watched, you know, because I've been home for the last 6 months, so I watched the whole season and enjoyed it. Matthew Broderick's one of the stars that I definitely encourage people to check out. It's pretty darn well done and fun. And while it has zombie elements, it's mostly about people, you know, dealing with each other a little more so.
Anyway, tired of zombie shit. So let's stop talking about it.
It's been years of zombies and vampires and like, we don't need it, man. Like Invisible Man, that was cool. Like, give me more Invisible Man stuff, you know?
Let's bring back from the dead Poker Masters 2018 in this hand, shall we?
Let's.
Alex Trembath suggested this hand. Good job, Alex. Longtime listener. Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I'll say it. I mean it.
Oh.
Alex, of course, knows what he's doing, so he suggested on Twitter. We are the Poker Guys on Twitter, @2PokerGuys. If you want to suggest a hand for the breakdown, please tweet at us, include a YouTube link, and a timestamp of the hand. That is how you might get your hand on the breakdown, broken down by guys who like to complain about different movie genres.
Yeah.
But also, then we eventually talk about poker after we're done with that.
It's about right.
What other movie genre do you want to complain about before we get into the hand?
I'm kind of done with most disaster movies. Again, they're just so similar to each other. I feel like I've mostly seen it. Not to say you can't do a great disaster movie. Of course you can. The Impossible comes to mind, which is a fabulous disaster movie. But based on a true story also. So maybe that adds to some of the power of it. You know, also it's... You know, the acting that they have, it's Ewan McGregor, Naomi Watts, Tom Holland as like a 9-year-old kid who kills it as a 9-year-old kid. So the emotional stuff, the emotional beats play a little bit better. I believe it, you know, when they like, so when someone gets rescued, like how intense it is. But mostly disaster movies are like, yeah, we've seen it. We know all these people are going to die. These two people aren't. You know, I feel like often I can call who isn't going to die in a movie now. And I'm not interested when that's the case. I want to be surprised.
Yeah. Fair enough.
How about for you? Anything you want to throw on the pile while we're killing?
It's actually kind of the opposite. It's kind of like I'm pre-embarrassed for myself because there's a genre of movie. It's not exactly a genre, but it's the type of storytelling that kind of always gets me, always brings me in, and I always end up liking the movie, and I feel like I'm being kind of simple. But any sort of like closed loop system where you don't really have much information type of movie where you just like start in a location and something's happening, but you don't really know what it is. And there's not real, maybe the movie takes entirely in place in one room or one building or something. Stuff like that always works for me. And I feel like I'm like being manipulated into enjoying that in a way that is like below me or something. Like I should be better than that, than to just be easily manipulated into that.
I mean, I'm both charmed and often put off by the movies that start like, there's a movie called Unknown with Liam Neeson. There's another movie, I believe, also called Unknown with Jim Caviezel. Both are similar where like these guys sort of like don't know why they are where they are, or who they are or anything, but they're in like a pretty intense situation and they have to like figure it out. And so for the first half of both those movies, it's really intriguing to me. Because I'm like, what's going on? How could this be? You know, and it's like the mystery of it is really enticing. But then when they try and actually answer the question, they almost never do a good job. And it's deeply unsatisfying for me.
Well, you know, what movie actually just crushed that. The genre has been beaten already is The Bourne Identity.
I suppose so. Yeah, the thing about the Bourne Identity is we kind of know what's going on with the Bourne Identity, don't we? Even if he doesn't, like, it's not...
I don't think that's true. It's so ingrained in our cultural knowledge right now that movie was a really big deal for a long time. Like, the first time I saw it, at least, like, I knew he didn't know who he was. I knew he had, like, these skills, but I had no idea where they were going to go with it. I thought I had, like, inklings of what it could be, but it wasn't super clear.
I guess I don't completely disagree with you, but I guess to me, the Bourne Identity is more like, yeah, he's going to be a super spy. Now, there had already been a lot of famous books written by Robert Ludlum about the Bourne Identity, the Bourne Supremacy, all this stuff that I was aware of. I don't think I'd ever read them, so maybe I sort of knew that ahead of time. But, like, for example, the Liam Neeson movie that I was describing, Unknown, is kind of awesome. It's like, he wakes up, he's some kind of violent dude, sort of, but in weird situations, people are claiming different things, and it's really unclear what side he's on, who he is, why these things are happening at all. Like, I just can't put it together until they finally explain it, but then it's dumb, and it's not good. So I like that, except I want it to be satisfying, which is it almost never is. Man.
All right, speaking of satisfying, let's finally satisfy the listener obligation of the podcast and talk about poker.
Or the audience. We could satisfy the audience a little bit. Although they like this too, some of them. At least some of them.
I mean, they can fast forward through it if they don't want to hear, that's right. And they can get to the poker.
Okay.
Which we're going to do right now.
Great.
So we have three remaining in this 2018 Poker Masters event. It was a 100K buy-in. The three remaining are Corey Aldemir, Dan Smith, and who's the third guy? It's
David Peters.
David Peters. It's a tough little 300 table, which you would expect in a 100K.
Yeah.
Current payout is something like 400K, and first is 1.1 million. Is that right?
1.15 million. Second place is 700,000. There were 25 players, okay. Four places paid. We are in the money. Bryn Kenny already eliminated in fourth place.
All right. Well, the blinds are 15 and 30K. And Corey Aldemir is the short stack with 980K in his stack. Peters folds the button, and Aldemir limps the small blind with Jack of Clubs, Seven of Hearts. We don't need to overanalyze, like, what the mixed strategy should be here or whatever. Like, he's going to limp sometimes, he's going to raise sometimes. He's never folding this hand, small to big, with this stack depth, right?
Yep.
Dan Smith is in the big blind. He's got 2.1 million, doing pretty well. He has Ace of Hearts, Eight of Diamonds. He raises to 100K. What do you think about raising? What do you think about the sizing?
I'm completely fine with raising. I think raising is mostly standard here with a hand this good. I'm a little surprised he only goes 100K. I would have thought he might even go a little higher. But the truth is 100K should get folds most of the time from a lot of... Aldemir's going to have a lot of, like, limp folds here. Right, he's going to have, like, the 8-5 offs of the world and 8-6 offs and even 8-7 off. I just don't know that he's going to call those hands out of position. You know, he's going to have just lots of stuff like that, I think. Even Jack 7 off is pretty questionable as a call out of position. It's close. A Jack 8 off, I think, is a call for sure. Jack 6 off is a clear fold, right?
Yeah, well, Aldemir does call, and what may influence that and what may also influence the idea that Smith should raise bigger is that it is big blind ante and it's three-handed, and they haven't adjusted the big blind ante for that, so... It's 30K in antes in this 15K, 30K with only three players at the table. So you're incentivized to not throw your hand away if you're Aldemir.
Yeah. Now, he's going to be out of position against a great player. But, I mean, he's always going to be up against a great player from here on out anyway. So I think this is close with Jack 7 off, though, I will say. Like, I think it's if he folded, I wouldn't really think anything of it except, like, yeah, that's not crazy. That's fine.
Yeah. I agree.
I would probably actually fold if I was him, but I am not him. He is way better than I am. So, you know, it's
yes,
okay.
He is. He is. All right. So he does call. Pot's 230K now. Aldemir is in the small blind as the effective stack with Jack 7 off. He started the hand with just over 32 big blinds. And Dan Smith has Ace 8 off and is the chip leader. The flop is Deuce of Hearts, 10 of Hearts, 9 of Clubs. Both players have a little bit of something. Aldemir more front door. He's got the gut shot. Eight will make him a straight. And Dan Smith has ace high with the backdoor nut flush draw with the ace of hearts on this two-heart board. Aldemir checks. Smith checks back. What do you think about the check back first?
I feel like I understand it on one level where, like, this isn't like a range advantage board for Smith for sure. It isn't necessarily amazing for Aldemir either, although most of Aldemir's, like, limp calls, not most, a bunch of Aldemir's limp calls are going to have something to do with this board, right? Like, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like, I guess he could have some ace highs. But he doesn't really have any pocket pairs. So he's got connected cards. He can have like, he can definitely have tens and he can have nines and he can have straight draws very reasonably. The one reason I can really think to bet for Dan rather than to check is because he does have the two back doors, and especially because he has the ace of hearts, which means if another heart comes, he could decide to get bluffy without even having to, without having to get there or anything. He could just put a lot of pressure on Aldemar. So that's the main reason to bet. The major reason to check is this is clearly not, probably it's a range advantage board, if anything, for Aldemar, if I had to pick.
Yeah, maybe. I think it depends on what you think is going to happen when you bet when Aldemar has a piece of this board. Like, yeah. Is Aldemar going to check raise with this hand, with Jack 7? If he is, if you think he is, it's probably not a good idea to bet because then Aldemar has way too many check raises and you're folding against a check raise.
Yeah.
If he's not, I really do like a bet because we're telling a much better story of having the flush, which we would block the nut flush of if another heart came, if we bet now. Aldemar should really expect that we would bet two hearts anytime we had two hearts, right? For the most part. Of course, we're Dan Smith, we're tricky. Sometimes we're not going to. But if we want to tell the most consistent story, betting is a better way to do that.
Yeah, I think it is. We certainly are going to check back some of our nut flush draws here, I think. But we're going to bet hearts a lot. That's just very normal and natural. And you got to bet some things. You're not going to check 100% on this board, I don't think, as Dan Smith. So there's going to be some hands we want to bet. Big flush draws are going to be a big part of that. Range, of course, like ace 10, it's going to be a big, you know, things like that, over pairs, some monsters, some air.
Yeah. Anyway, Smith decides to check back. Maybe he thinks Aldemar does have a lot of check raises, not sure. But the turn is the five of hearts.
Yeah.
So now Smith is probably wishing he had bet the flop. Board now reads deuce of hearts, 10 of hearts, 9 of clubs, 5 of hearts, Smith with the ace of hearts, 8 of diamonds, Aldemar with jack 7 off with the 7 of hearts. For the bad flush draw and the gut shot. So, as Aldemar, this feels like a green light to bet. Now that Smith checked the flop, you feel like you have more heart combos in your range than Smith does, right?
Absolutely. Feels like Dan is saying, I have maybe a little something, but not a lot of something. Ace high makes sense, for sure. Maybe ace deuce. He could have ace deuce or something like that and decide to check it back. As Aldemar, we should probably understand that often one bet isn't going to get it done. Maybe sometimes it will, because like you said, we have a lot more hard combos. Dan could just have a, you know, like a, I don't really know what, king X hand that's suited, king four suited or something like that, that's just a miss completely, like king four of spades, and just give up here, which would be fine with us as Aldemar. But most of the time, I think Dan is probably going to at least consider calling on this turn, right? He's going to have some big hearts in his hand he's going to be able to call with. He might have a pair, and that's why he checked. He might have an ace high that he's planning on calling with at least once. So the plan, I think we should bet, and I think we should often believe we're going to have to bet twice.
I think that's probably right. He goes relatively big with the bet. Maybe he's trying to make it so he doesn't have to bet twice quite as often. Betting 150 into 230. This should fold out a lot of hands. Like, if Smith had king, queen of spades, do you think he would call with two overs in the gut shot for this size?
Geez, when the third heart comes, I actually don't know. I think that's really close. I think that's the question. That may be the exact perfect question to ask. Because like most of the other hands are probably going to be more clear, right? But king, queen of spades, like probably, I guess we probably call because we're in position and we might be able to steal it later anyway. Like we can't call just to improve. We're going to have to take shots on the river if he checks, at least on certain rivers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's not what Dan has. He has the ace of hearts in his hand. So what is the better option with the ace of hearts in your hand? Do you want to raise now or do you want to call? Because you can't really fold when you've turned the nut flush draw and you've checked the flop.
I mean, if we raise, it's a bit of a suspicious story. The story is we check back the hearts, right? That's got to be the story. And now we have it and we're raising. It feels like it doesn't feel like that's something we would do all that often. You know, is check back hearts and then raise the turn. Like, here's how to get the least amount of value from a flush draw and then a flush is to not bet when you are on the draw and raising right away when you get there against the small blind. So he definitely should raise once in a while when he has it. He should play a flush like this once in a while for sure. But mostly, I don't know. I don't know how believable the story is. Now, against Corey's actual hand, it's probably going to work. But against Corey's range, I don't know that a raise is going to be super effective here. So also, we could have the best hand with ace high.
Could and do, but we have to kind of figure out a little bit, and it always takes subjective reasoning. What does Corey's range actually contain? Because you were kind of implying that it contained too many calls to raise this profitably because the story is not good enough. But once Smith checks the flop, maybe Corey is betting like the majority of his range on the turn because it looks like Smith doesn't have a flush too often. And even though the story might be bunk, what's Corey going to do with, you know, jack high, queen high, no equity type hands that he just feels like, oh, I guess I better take a shot. This is a good card for my range versus Dan's now that the heart comes. So
that's fair. I mean, but we also don't have to bluff those hands out. We can deny equity, I guess, but we could also just call with ace high and have the best hand.
True. True. And at the same point, maybe we can actually have some implied odds. Maybe Corey is not going to believe that we really have the nut flush that often if we get there on the river.
Because we just called the raise. Turn.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, we can have, if we had like King X with the King of Hearts and the X had, it was either an overcard or something to do with the board in some way, we're definitely calling, right? Like,
yeah.
King Queen with the King of Hearts, of course, is calling. But maybe King, it's hard to come up with much. King nine with the King of Hearts would always call. King nine with not without the King of Hearts would call though as well. It's hard. I mean, it's hard because we checked the flop. It's always going to be hard for Corey to put us on a lot of heart stuff, but the fourth heart coming on the river, I think it's a little easier to put us on that once we call the turn, like, and then if we then act strongly, like, it's not crazy that we could have the ace of hearts or king of hearts in our hand.
Yeah. So Smith decides to call. Do you think this is with the intention of making a play a lot of the time, or do you think he's going to just hope he has the best hand a lot of the time if he doesn't improve?
Let's say like the deuce pair's on the river and Corey checks. Is Dan going to check it back or not? Right. Is the question basically.
Yeah.
I think Dan probably is checking it back in that spot a fair amount because now it looks like, or either bet huge or check back are his only two real options there, right? Because Corey, if Corey checks, he's either, ace high is either good or Corey's planning on check calling, usually.
Yeah.
So I think if we call, the plan has got to be only try and take it away on certain rivers, not every river. You know, like if a king comes, that's a pretty good card to bluff on, right? Obviously, an ace or heart, we're already there, so that's nice for us. Maybe a queen, we could do that too.
Maybe.
But if a brick comes and Corey checks, I don't know, man. Either we're good or we're probably not getting a fold unless we bet 1.3 times the pot or something.
Well, calling is going to... I mean, raising is probably, against Aldemir's actual hand, obviously the better play because we get to win right now. But hey, we get to be ahead and we have all the equity against Corey's hand with the ace of hearts in our hand. And we also block the eight, which is a nice little bonus, which is what Corey needs for a straight. So Dan's in a pretty good spot heading to the river. And if you want to be in a good spot, Nitrogen Sports Poker.
Hey, everyone.
I tried a little pause thing.
I like it. Hey, everyone. If you love playing things... Nitrogen Sports Poker.
Let us tell you about this website. www.org/gov/nitrogen is where you can gain access to all of the happy dreams that you might have. Bitcoin only is what it is, and there are tournaments. One of them is ours. It happens monthly, every month. Sunday is the day that it happens on. It is good for you because of the money involved, and you like money, you are a consumer.
Love gamble and action. Nitrogen Sports Poker.
Okay, we can be done with that part now. That was kind of fun, though. There is a link in the description that gets you to Nitrogen Sports. If you use that link when you sign up, you get access to our special tournament. It happens the last Sunday of every month and sometimes the first Sunday of the month if, you know, there's a little weirdness that occurs. But it's going to happen monthly no matter what. There are 1,000 buy-ins guaranteed. And guess what? They cap it at 300 players. That means there is at least a 700-player overlay guaranteed every time. It's huge extra money that just goes in there. It's great.
I mean, how did this go down in the Nitrogen Sports Poker boardroom? The guy's like, all right, here's my pitch, Mr. CEO. We're going to guarantee 1,000 buy-ins, and the most we can ever make is 300 buy-ins. So we always lose at least 700 buy-ins, usually more like 800 or 900. Well, it'll be great. And the CEO's like, son, get on that right away, Stilson. And Stilson runs out of the room. And like, how did, what black magic fuckery happened that the CEO of Nitrogen got tricked into this? How is this still going on? It's been like 2 years. I don't understand.
Hey, you know, the upshot is that it's great for the people who use the link in the description. Yeah. It's like, we're not just... We are obviously sponsored by Nitrogen. We're trying to get you to sign up for Nitrogen because it's good for us too. It's nice to show that you came from us. But like, legitimately, this tournament is absurd. It's ridiculous. It's an absurd value. It's great for everybody who gets to be involved. Whether or not Nitrogen is making a mistake doesn't matter to you. It's extra money in your pocket from an expected value perspective.
You might, in your life, get a better value in poker once or twice. You know, there may be a free roll you're invited to, you know, which you get to play in, and it's, you know, it's better. But you're never going to get this level of value every single month from a poker tournament or any poker experience. You can't. It's impossible. It's the only thing in the world like this. It's crazy. You got to get in on this. Otherwise, you're the one with the problem, Dad.
Yeah, good point. All right. On that note, let's get back to the hand.
That was a legendary ad. I feel like that was one of the. That was a good one. We did great.
You think so?
Yeah.
We've done a lot of weird ones.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of weird ones.
The Rio.
Anyway,
Rio de Salsa. Okay.
So, oh, yeah, that one. Okay. Deuce of hearts, ten of hearts, nine of clubs is the flop. Turns the five of hearts. Corey Aldemir's got jack seven. He does have the seven of hearts for the bad flush draw. Dan Smith has ace eight with the ace of hearts. Pot's 530K after Aldemir bet the turn and Dan Smith called. The river is the jack of diamonds. So Aldemir gets there in the not super good way, but good enough. Top pair. Very much usually good, right? So that's good news.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it worth a bet? Should we try to get called by something? Like, what are we trying to get called by if we bet?
Any nine, any pocket pair below the nine, some ace highs that don't believe us because hearts missed. That's about it. Mostly the nine.
I feel like you'd expect Smith to bet the flop with any pair most of the time.
I mean, I think he just has a lot of checks on this board, and that's why he checked the ace eight. So I don't know if that's true.
Maybe.
If he doesn't have any pairs, then this is not a good bet. Then we should check and let the king of hearts take a shot to try and get us off a pair, I think. So
yeah, perhaps so. Well, I think Aldemir is trying to get called by check back pairs, maybe even hands like King Deuce, and Ace Deuce, or pocket threes, pocket fours, because he bets 175 into 530. He's really giving those hands a good price to call.
And maybe even an ace high once in a while could think about calling as a result, too. The thing is, that jack does make like a lot
Smith,
of makes a lot of hands, you know?
It does. That's what I was about to get to. Like, as far as Dan Smith is concerned, this is not a good card. Just because Aldemir's range now just got way stronger. We obviously don't have much with ace high on this board. It's a pretty coordinated board at this point. Aldemir usually has us beat, right? We can't really hero with ace high.
It seems questionable when the jack specifically comes to hero with ace high, and we have the ace of hearts in our hand. So now we need him to have a weird king of hearts with that doesn't have a pair. I don't know if I buy that. That calls the raise and doesn't raise himself. Maybe preflop, maybe. But there's not much there. It feels like he always has us beat, pretty much. So I don't think we can call.
Okay, so the next question is, of course, should we use our nut blocker?
Right.
Should we basically just move him in? Or I guess we don't have to do that, but that's the most likely thing we would do if we were going to raise. Should we say, like, I can have the nuts and you can't? Or is the story a little bit too bunk because we didn't bet the flop?
Well, here's my question. I think just claiming we have the flush is maybe a little bunk. Would we move in with a hand worse than a flush? Can we have king queen here and race? Because we might play king queen just like this.
I questioned you, and you didn't really have an answer as to whether king queen without a heart could even call the turn.
I ended up saying I think so. I think it's probably, because we're in position, I think it's probably a little too good. We can steal sometimes, I think we probably have to call. I think.
Probably.
Yeah.
But when, I don't know. Okay.
When Aldemir only bets 175 really on the river, he doesn't have very many flushes.
It might come down to like if you have the king or queen of hearts in your hand. Like if you have the king or queen of hearts in your hand, you block enough flushes that you can move in and hope to get heroed by something. But if you don't, maybe you're just too worried about a flush because nothing indicates that Aldemir doesn't have a flush other than blockers to you if you're Dan Smith.
That's
right?
Correct. That's correct. And Aldemir did limp call preflop. So all the weird suited stuff feels like it's absolutely could be in there still. Not all of it, but a bunch of suited stuff can be in there. And, you know, like Jack six suited, not maybe not Jack six. Yeah, actually Jack six suited or Queen six suited, stuff like that can be in there. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we can have, I don't know that we would actually raise King Queen here. Because of what you're saying.
Are we raising all flushes?
Yeah, when he bets 175K, don't we have to? Don't we just have to?
I think probably, yeah.
And then if we're raising all flushes, maybe we could maybe we can consider at least King Queen, the nut straight. Maybe we can consider it.
I think maybe just King or Queen of Hearts is, okay. is how you do that.
Yeah.
Like you want to block it a little bit. Obviously, if you have a flush, you block him having a flush, that's good. So yeah, I think maybe just call with King Queen no heart and raise with King Queen with a heart for value.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if we're going to raise that weak of a hand on this board, we probably do have to take our nut blocker and turn it into a bluff for the sake of balance against fields like this, right?
Yeah, as long as we wouldn't bet King Queen on the flop, that's fine.
Yeah,
but if we wouldn't bet King Queen or some of our flush draws on the flop, great. But if we're actually betting all those, then we got a real problem against a guy like Aldemir.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think if we want to be able to check back flush draws on the flop sometimes, I think that also means we have to raise this hand.
Yeah.
Because we have to have something to balance the flushes with, which are disguised.
Agreed. This is kind of the perfect hand to do it with, right? We have an eight, which blocks the straight. We have an ace, the ace of hearts, which blocks the heart stuff and the best heart. It's kind of a perfect spot to do it with. Maybe ace queen is even better.
It is.
But
I mean,
whatever.
In like 2011, it would have been a terrible idea because nobody would have believed that you had a flush.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter that you have a blocker. Everybody would expect that you bet all of your flush draws on the flop because everybody did bet all of their flush draws on the flop. And still, for the most part, people are betting all of their flush draws on the flop. But at these levels, when these players are playing an iterated game against each other, playing over and over again in these super high stakes games, balance is much more important than when you're playing the main event or something. So you're going to see Dan Smith show up with a flush sometimes, which means he has to have the nut blocker sometimes because that's his best bluff.
Yep.
So I think ultimately he's kind of, from a strategic standpoint, forced to shove even if he doesn't want to.
Yeah, that seems about right. I'm down with everything you just said. I agree. So Dan should shove.
Well, that's what he does.
Good.
That's what he does. Goes all in for 730 effective. Okay, here's the fun part. What do you do, Corey Aldemir?
Well, there's, of course, the obvious answer, which is we have one pair and no kicker. We should fold, right? That's the quick, instant answer if you're up against normal players. That's level one. Level two is, well, wouldn't he bet his flush draws usually on the flop anyway? And even his king queens on the flop mostly, you know? And if he would, now, like, what does he really have for value? Okay, he probably has some of those still, but probably not a lot. So now we don't have that much value. Secondarily, Aldemir only bet 175K on the river into a pot of 530,000. And as Aldemir, I might be wondering, did I just induce this a little bit with my sizing? Did that just happen?
Yeah. But I think on the side of folding is distribution. I think that's pretty clear. Now, we do have the seven of hearts, which is good for our distribution. But if we go by hand strength first, which maybe blockers are more important. I don't know if the seven of hearts is that important of a heart blocker, but it is a heart blocker. Yeah. But like we do have all of the flushes in our range, right? Like maybe we don't have ace king and ace queen and ace jack of hearts, but we do have a ton of flushes in our range.
Yeah.
So those are all better than this hand. We certainly have some two pairs in our range. We certainly have some straights in our range.
Yeah.
This is deep down in the distribution, man. It is not very high.
Like, no question.
Are we betting a 9 on the river? Are we betting a 10 on the river? I don't know. Maybe we're betting a 10 and not a 9.
Maybe.
But we're pretty low.
We're pretty low. Having that 7 of hearts, though, maybe frees him up, though, where he can bump it back up You know, because in his mind, maybe like we were saying, mostly this is flushes that Dan's raising. And if having a heart blocker really bumps it back up a bunch. And also the story that, you know, the story of the hand, the action of the hand is such that Dan probably doesn't have that many flushes. Of course, he has a few, but he probably doesn't have that many. And if he doesn't have that many flushes and we have a heart blocker, suddenly maybe this bumps it up enough. Dan's never doing this with a hand worse than a straight, I don't think. Like, I don't think he's doing it with a set. I don't think he's doing it with, you know, like King Jack or something. So that's good. We don't have to worry about that piece of it, Ace Jack. It's just we have a card that blocks the hearts. That's pretty great. You know, I'd rather have it be the Queen of Hearts, but.
Do you think that ultimately this hand is better to call with than Jack 10 unless it was Jack 10 with the Jack of Hearts? Any Jack 10 that's not with the Jack of Hearts, is this a better hand to call with?
I do, actually, because they play the same against the value range and the bluff range, but one has a blocker and one doesn't. I think this has got to be better.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So does this
but band, does that get does, it high enough?
Is this hand, would we rather call with this hand than 7-8 without a heart in our hand? 7-8's a straight, but it's the bad straight. Still, we don't think it beats any value still.
It feels like that's going too far, but I don't think it is.
Right.
And it depends on if Smith would shove a set sometimes, right, which we didn't get into. We probably would think not if we got into it. But, you know, we've been wrong. And as Corey Aldemir, you could be wrong in thinking that too.
Yeah. Maybe we don't have to pick between those two anyway. Maybe we can decide to call with both. If we think Smith has sets because we only bet 175 on the 175 means maybe Dan's going to shove a little bit lighter, but still for value. With like if he rivers, I don't think Dan ever can really ever river a set of jacks though. So it'd be like he turned a set of fives, just calls because it's the five of hearts, wants to give Aldemir a chance to bluff. Aldemir only bets 175 after betting 150 on the turn, and Dan's like, okay, you almost never have me here. You would have bet more with your stronger hands, I think. Mostly. So I'm going to try and get max value with my set and hope you have two pair and call. So maybe we have, I don't know how often those things happen. Dan has very few sets as played though, right? Like it's kind of only a set of fives unless he's checking that board on the flop just constantly, which I don't know that he is.
I don't think he is.
I think he's betting his sets on the flop, on that flop.
Yeah. See, I don't know. It's like, with the blocker, maybe this fits more in the middle of the distribution.
I mean, I think it's better than all the two pairs already.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I'd rather have a straight.
Yeah, the 8-7. Because we'd obviously rather have king-queen.
Just in case.
We'd rather have king-queen, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, like once in a while, we're going to call and be like, oh, we got thin value from me here. He's like really good and he got thin value. That sucks.
Yeah.
Probably we'd rather, okay, maybe we'd rather have a straight, but that feels like, but if that's the cutoff and then we'd rather have this hand because we have a heart in it than anything in between that doesn't have a heart in it, that's still pretty powerful and jumps Jack 7 with the 7 of hearts way, way, way up there, right?
Yeah. I guess we do block 7-8 ourselves also.
Helps a little. I mean, I don't know if Dan's actually shoving that, but again, we bet 175. Maybe he is. I don't think so, but maybe.
I don't think so either, but just in case, it's nice to at least block it a little.
I think when you combine the three factors of Dan checked the flop and just called the turn and now raised the river, that I mean, that looks like the Ace of Hearts play, right? It doesn't mean it is, but it looks like it, number one. Number two, we have the Seven of Hearts, which is one of the key blockers. There's better blockers, but that's a pretty key blocker. And then number three, we only bet 175, which might be inducing. Maybe I think we're probably supposed to call this, although in real time, I can't imagine coming to that.
I think ultimately all of that is like once you have that figured out, it becomes meaningless and it's just math. Then it's like, where do we fit in our distribution? Because it's Dan Smith. It's not an amateur. Right. So like we know he has the Ace of Hearts play. We also know he has flushes and we know he's going to be more balanced than your typical opponent by a mile. Right.
Sure.
So due to that, we can't just say like, well, this is just the Ace of Hearts play and it's never a flush, like because that's not fair to Dan Smith. So ultimately it comes down to distribution and we're getting about 3-1, a little bit worse than 3-1, like 2.7-1. So we just have to choose like the top 30% of our distribution we have to cut off the bottom 30% of our distribution and call with the rest.
Well, if that's the case, it feels like Jack 7 with the 7 of Hearts is going to be a call if that's the deal, right? Here's another factor which matters is I think Aldemir's third in chips when this hand starts. I'm pretty sure he is.
Yeah.
So he has a little bit more go for it in him, probably. You know what I mean? Like he's a little bit more incentivized to call because of that. He's already going to be even more cut down. I mean, he'll still have a reasonable stack. He's got 730K, right? So it's 24 blinds, 25 blinds. But against these two guys, getting chipped down when he could be, if he calls and is right, I think he's the chip leader. Like, that's a big difference. So that's another piece which, as Aldemir, when you put everything else already in the hopper, that's another reason to call if I have to, you know, put it on one side or the other.
Well, he agrees. He makes the call. So like good job, Corey Aldemir, except that he still went out in third place.
He did.
He did not.
But this is a great call. I mean, we make it sound like, so of course you would call here, but like I said, I don't think in real time I would be making this call. Even if I did all the math, I'd still be like, can I really call with Jack 7? Like, it feels so, so bad to do that. It feels so wrong and bad. And Aldemir is good enough.
You can't do it against Matt Berkey. You can't call against Matt Berkey. Matt Berkey might shove aces here.
On the river? God, that would be really depressing. If he has like ace jack and he shoves, that would be so depressing.
I mean, of all of the players who might be playing on 100K, who are pros, Matt Berkey's the guy who maybe you can't, you have to change which parts of your distribution you call with.
Maybe.
Because the seven of hearts blocker is not as important.
Worry more about
Berkey
rank.
Has like,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point. I don't know if he's still overvaluing hands the way he used to like that. It's unclear to me if that's true. But certainly from 2018, Matt Berkey, which is when this hand is taking place anyway, yes, that's an interesting strategic shift you probably would want to make. That's weird, but a good point. Anyway, so yeah, Aldemir calls, wins, but goes out third anyway. David Peters wins the whole thing. Dan Smith gets a nice 700K check for second place. Not too shabby.
David Peters just sitting on the sideline, watching him fight, grinning, sipping his coffee, like, haha, I've got you now.
I mean, you know, when the all-in happens and Aldemir actually calls, Peters is like, that may have just won me, I may have just earned $300,000 just sipping this coffee, and then it turns out he didn't. But it's always an incredible moment, you know, when there's a big potential elimination and you're just sitting on the sideline.
Sure.
And all, like, you're sitting with all this equity, like potential equity right in front. Actually, you do gain the equity for that until the hand is resolved, you know, until you know the showdown.
Yeah.
And it feels amazing to have that. I've definitely been there. I'm sure, of course, we all have, where it's like, oh my God. I'm thinking of one spot where we were three-handed and the top two places were 12K worth of World Series main event seat and cash, and there were three of us left, and the two guys, I was the chip leader, and the other two guys had almost the exact same stack, and it went like raise, shove, pause, call, and before the cards even got flipped over, I was like, oh my God, well, I guess I'm good, like, and then luckily the guy who even had more, the guy who covered barely won the hand, so it was over, but like, it was almost like, I was like, oh, I almost always win now, like, how great. It's a nice feeling.
The best example of that is, of course, our friend Mitchell Towner in the Monster Stack, where he was three-handed for the Monster Stack. He had the chip lead back in 2016. His opponents had very similar stacks. One guy opened who had like 33 blinds or something.
I think more.
The guy in the small blind shoved. The guy who opened had ace-8. The guy in the small blind who had more than 33 blinds shoved with ace-4. Mitch folds. The guy with ace-8 can't get his chips in fast enough.
Correctly, and as it turns
like,
out.
Immediately, Mitch made $300K in a $1,500 buy-in right there.
Yep.
Like, either outcome, usually a player's going out soon. The guy with ace-4 just flop trips, and Mitch was heads up, and then he won the event. But, like, what an incredible equity spot.
Yep, amazing. Absolutely amazing. Another one I'm thinking of, not exactly the same, but a little bit similar, is the Joe Chong, Jonathan Duhamel play, where Reisner's the guy with the shortest stack. He still has, like, 35 blinds, but significantly shorter than the other two. And he watches Joe Chong 7-bet all in, I think, with ace seven.
I think it was a 6-bet.
6-bet all in with like ace.
I think it was a 6-bet.
And Duhamel calls with queens, and just like that, Chung is out. Chung had a lot of chips, had like 80 blinds or something like that, just out. And Reisner's like,
no, I think Chung was just cut down, wasn't he? Or was he actually out?
No, I think he was out on that. I'm pretty sure he was out on that play. Oh. And Reisner immediately like moves up like, you know, $2 million. Like, wow.
What a deal.
What a deal.
Music is my sunlight, and all I need is one mic. And I can show every single MC how it's done right. Every time I come by, I'm bound to leave them tongue-tied. I'm sipping on liquor, a quitter is what I'm not. We got one life, and I took a minor break, but I'm back to claim the throne. I'm gonna be traveling the globe, we still have time to make...